At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
During that game in Munich last week, I got a text off one of Pogba's family, and it just said, different animal.
You know, Mancini has wanted everyone to have fun, you know.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the OTB Football Podcast.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Quick Start Car Insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at getsetgo.ie.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating 10k to Irish football for every goal England score the Euros. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Okay, so every now and then there's a young player everybody seems to know about, even people beyond just football people. Joe Cole jumps to mind. He was famous before most of us had seen him play. In the 90s, as the Premier League was really beginning to boom, Sonny Pike was the next big thing. There were countless media features. There were keepy-uppies before the League Cup final at Wembley. There were scouts from pretty much every club across England inquiring. He trained with Ajax. His legs were insured for £1 million. And ultimately, it didn't quite work out the way people had hoped. Sonny, now 38 years of age, has written a book about the whole experience. I'll hold it up here for those of you watching. Sonny Pike, the greatest player that never was. Happy to say Sonny is with us. Hey, Sonny, great to have you with us.
How are you? How are you, mate? You're right, good?
Yeah, very well. So, I mean, interesting to say the least. Let's dive right in because it's a interesting story to say the least. And I suspect it's a story that lots of people maybe in your position could tell. But you seemed to be especially famous, especially well-known at one stage. I mean, it went a bit nuts just how much of a household name you were. I mean, Bedil and Skinner, Big Breakfast, all at a very young age. I mean, national profile.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's from, from when I was like, I was getting well-known as soon as I started playing football from 6, 7 year old, obviously locally. But then when I got to like, say 10 years old, I went on something called London Tonight. And then off the back of that, like you said, went to Ajax and did that sort of thing. When I came back from there, I did the whole 90s theme. Did the Bedil and Skinner 90 Coca-Cola Cup final, the Coca-Cola Kid, McDonald's adverts, Big Breakfast, all of them, yeah.
Yeah. You started off your football career in Enfield, North London. You're writing the book, tough couple of years. Initially, family life was very difficult. It seems money was a big stress. I think the family kind of coming apart at the seams. Ultimately, you talk about the breakdown of your parents' relationship, which seemed unbelievably difficult and messy and protracted. It went on over a couple of years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think that's what a lot of people probably get from the book when I was starting to become well-known and before that whole time, like sort of my family, my mum and dad was getting divorced and it was a bit messy. So I was sort of dealing with that, as well as becoming like a famous kid as well at the same time. Mm. So yeah, it was quite a lot at a young age to sort of juggle.
You say they were total opposites, your parents?
Yeah, yeah. So pretty old school, really. So like my dad was like the provider, go to work, this, that, and my mum would be at home cooking dinner, that sort of side of it. My mum's sort of chilled, relaxed sort of vibe, and whatever you want to do, Sonny, I'm happy for you to do. Just come here, I'll give you something to eat. And then like my dad's like, you've got to go, we've got to push, we've got to get this done. And yeah, so they was quite opposite in their ways. But I suppose they say, didn't they, opposites attract and whatever else. That's why they sort of worked for when it worked. But yeah, and that's the sort of thing I mentioned a lot in the book. When I got older, to sort of getting that blend of the sort of both of them was always like the hardest, biggest mission I've always sort of had to fight, and still to this day, trying not to overtop push is sort of always a bit of a balancing act and trying to get the right blend. Hopefully getting there. I've got kids of my own now, so I'm trying.
You're a striker. You take to it pretty quickly. You start scoring a bunch of goals, I think 120 in one season, like just the kind of mad numbers that really talented kids do when they're young, which catch the eye. So I guess where the hype starts, is in the local paper, where it probably does for lots of players, and increasingly you start to be, you know, you're part of the headlines, and it's, you know, little feature in the local paper on just how good you are. So that must have been quite nice at the start. I mean, that's the, like, an appropriate level of attention that you kind of want for doing your thing.
Exactly, exactly. And that's what I say to be fair. Actually, it was quite nice to look in the local paper, even if it was the tiniest couple of inches. Oh, and Sonny Pike scored, and even if they put a little minute, he scored here, and then he scored another goal, and then he set up a goal, and just like a little couple of lines, I used to be over the moon with it. And then it started to get like, instead of it being just a couple of inches, it'd be like, oh, Sonny scores, clear winner. And then it would be the rest of like what's gone on in the game. And yeah, I used to like it when it was like that, because it was just like you said, it's just not too much. It wasn't too, like, a few people might say to me locally over the park, oh, Sonny, I see your thing and that. And it was quite nice. But obviously when it goes to the next level and you become to see all the sort of extra things that come in with that, which I talk about in the book, like when I started to get really well known, kids would come from other areas, like say 20, 30, 50 minutes away, just to come to find me at my local park and sort of fight me and things like that.
Yeah, I know. There was one incident where you're at the cinema and one of your mates says, this is a bit later on when the attention's really growing and there's like 20 lads from the other estate who want to give you a hiding just because you're too big for your boots, I suppose.
Yeah.
Those initial stages, it's a real source of bonding with you and your father. He doesn't know a thing about football. He's more of a boxing man. He's going along for the ride and he's encouraging you and he's really supportive. He's at every game. So it's kind of a journey you very much set out on together.
Definitely. Yeah. And it was, like you said, it was when it was just like more local and me just doing really well and like the sort of normal side of it, I say, it was brilliant. Yeah. He was just sort of doing everything he could to help me, like with boots and even try and get me sponsorships, like to help me be able to go on certain football courses and go away and do certain things. He was like, I couldn't have asked for any better, to be honest with you. He was really good. I think, like, because he was into the boxing, like that mindset, like sort of that thinking of for yourself so much, he sort of drilled that into me as a kid. And I think that gave me that advantage as a young kid. I was like really sort of switched on early doors. Like I was hungry to sort of win so early. Which is a good thing, but it's obviously just when it gets a little bit later on in the story, when it's sort of just the extra sort of trappings and the extra things that came, that's when it sort of come off a little bit. Do you know what I mean? I think his mindset sort of shifted a little bit.
Yeah. So what age were you? You said that London Tonight TV package kind of changed things a bit. What age were you when that happened, Sonny?
I was 10.
Okay. And then that prompts other features. You know, it's a nice quirky feature. You see how the media like it, get the kid, do the thing. And it seems somehow a Dutch TV station come over and do a little feature on you. And a couple of weeks pass and then Ajax invite you over to train. And you're kind of unusual for a 90s kid where, you know, there's not that much technology. There's no internet, but you're like a massive Ajax fan. You love Cruyff. Yeah. Your dad's bought you a tape with all the greats of the game doing their thing. So you and Ajax, this is kind of dreamland stuff. So tell us about that week training with Ajax when you were, I guess, what, 10, 11?
Yeah. So that's what happened. Yeah. So I've got, we did the interview on TV. Dutch camera crew came over. And I was just talking about Cruyff. I was talking about Pelé and Maradona. Like you said, the tape I got as a kid, I couldn't stop watching it. So I was involved and really loved the technical aspect. I was watching Pelé doing sort of kick-ups and Cruyff turns and all this sort of stuff. And I don't think I was sort of used to young kids talking about technical stuff so much. And it got the attention and actually had a phone call. My dad said, like, sent me, come back home. And he said, you can go to Ajax or Feyenoord. But as soon as they said Ajax, I was just like, no, I've got to go to Ajax. That's where Cruyff was. Sort of, and at that point, they had just won. Actually, they hadn't just won. But that was the year they ended up winning the Champions League. So we leave my house to go, for instance. And then there's like camera crews watching me leave my house with my boots in the bag and everything else. And they're saying, like, can you walk out the house and do this? I'm like, yeah, but we ain't leaving for a couple of hours yet, but saying I'm still not twigged on to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there was Transworld Sport, there was Blue Peter, and there was two other Dutch camera teams out there, NJS or something, and another two Dutch camera crews out there. So we went out with Transworld Sport and Blue Peter, when we got off the other side, we met Tom Pronk, who was like a defender, played for the first team when he was running the academy. He met us at the other side and we're shaking hands with him and this Dutch camera crew's filming that. He takes me to a place in like the middle of the streets of Amsterdam. And, you know, like, so for instance, you know, like townhouses where they're built up like that and you had to walk down into like, it was the lower ground of it sort of thing in the basement, like this little room. I don't know if it was actually his or a friend of his, that was our place to stay. We put like our bed. It was like pretty simple, basic, quite dark actually down there. We had a big double bed and a toilet, and we put like Ajax flags above the door, above the bed, and a couple of posters. And it was just like us setting up to sort of go and do our thing in Ajax, which was lovely. We went to the training ground, started to train. The coach used to speak in English, then he'd say and talk in Dutch. We met Van Gaal. Van Gaal come in. I'm watching the first team train from out a window, and I'm just sitting there talking with my dad. My dad was having a cup of tea, and Van Gaal come in and said, like, see us drinking. He gave me some biscuits. And I was like, oh, thanks. And my dad was like, who's that? I said, that's Van Gaal. That's the first team manager. It's like, he didn't know if it was like some geezer just doing a bit of cleaning up. He didn't have a clue. And then I end up going watching them train. And at that point, I'm watching like Overmars, Canu, the De Boer brothers, Lippmann, Bergkamp. And I'm like watching the first team train and things like that. Unbelievable, getting to meet them all. Yeah, it was nice.
It was some team. So in that week of training, I mean, it was kind of interesting how Ajax were ahead of English football, very much so at that stage. You're doing funny things like clapping your hands over your head when you're dribbling, you know, to develop technical skills.
Yeah.
It's right up your street. You quite like it. You hold your own. I mean, so they seem to send you a letter afterwards and say, look, he's not necessarily better than what we have here, but we do want to keep tabs. Let's keep in touch over the intervening years. So did you kind of feel you were at that level? I know there were it'll probably turn out you trained with a bunch of players who went on to have good careers at that during that week, but you felt you were kind of at that level?
Technically, I felt definitely at that level is as good, if not better than some of them.
Okay.
As I say, it's in the book. For instance, like all the training, I've done really well. I was like sort of getting lost in it. I was so comfortable. But and they set it up for the end of the week that we had a match. And on the day of the match, I think it was like a 2 o'clock kickoff. And like at 5 o'clock in the morning, my dad tells me a few days before that I have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, pitch black, can't see a hand in front of my face. And we have to do me dribbling through the streets on the cobbles where the sun comes up. They took me to the flower market. They were taking me to all different points of interest to do interviews. And I did interviews until like, say, 12, 1 o'clock. So I'd done like 6 or 7 hours a day, like pretty much a day's work. And then I had to go and play the match. And I remember doing the warm-up. They just had a little warm-up across the pitch. And can we sprint halfway across the pitch? Like, you know, like you do across sideways.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, I'm a bit tired. You know what I mean? I was a bit knackered, but I done well. We drew 1-1 when I scored from outside the box. So I did well, but I was tired. I weren't as sharp as what I usually be. So I felt in that game, I could have probably done a little bit better, even though I probably looked like I did okay. But I did think to myself, I could have been sharper.
Yeah.
But obviously I had a lot of other commitments that I had to sort of uphold and do. But it was a good experience.
Yeah. That week where the filming happens, even on the day of the trial match, that's probably the first time in the book where you get a sense that the marketing aspect of this whole thing is starting to take over the footballing side. You know, the priorities have kind of gone awry. And it was so striking. So on return from Ajax, again, quirky story, so different. Ajax, media love it. So year 7, your attendance was about 50%. And in the 2.5 months after your training week with Ajax, in those 2.5 months, you do 64 media events, everything from, as we've said, Badil and Skinner, Hello Magazine, etc. And sponsorship starts to come into this. So suddenly, like, this goes from being kind of a cutesy story to we can make some money out of this. So McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Mizuno, all of this stuff starts being thrown at you. What's your memory of that period, maybe that 6 months, year after Ajax, when all of this big stuff starts happening?
Just like you said, just really busy, just literally spending a lot of time going into like big offices, like big glass offices, having meetings with people on big, massive tables. I'm just walking around these offices thinking like, what am I doing here talking to all these guys in suits and that? And they'd see, like, say 10 guys around, like, for instance, I'm thinking now, I'm talking there, like the Coca-Cola. They sent me up into, oh, we want you to be the Coca-Cola kid. And we set me on a big ball meeting table. My dad's there, I'm on one side, and then just, like, say six or seven other guys on the other side and whatever else in their suits. And they had like a big whiteboard behind, and I remember them just added a big triangle written on it, and then at the bottom it was saying like Coca-Cola are working in this here for football grassroots, so for instance. Then the next section would be like say Championship, and then it was like the Coca-Cola Cup final, and then at the top, very top cube, it said the Coca-Cola kid, and then they pointed to me and said, that's you. And I was like, okay. I was like, oh my god, like, it's like bit surreal really. But yeah, just a lot of time spending around talking to people in suits and everything else, and just thinking to myself, like, just want to play football, to be honest with you. What am I doing out here talking to all these people all the time?
Yeah. And so at that stage, say 10, 11, 12, you're probably a bit young. Well, you're certainly too young to sign professional forms, and scouts were approaching your father all the time. I couldn't quite work out why at 10, 11, 12, 13, you say you weren't necessarily training every week with a Premier League club. Like, why hadn't that happened? It seemed like it was just like offer after offer, or I'm talking to this guy, and it seemed you were flooded with attention, but you weren't maybe settling into a nice rhythm of training with a professional academy somewhere.
Yeah, well, this was it. So I was at a team called Child and Youth, and that's where I was getting a lot of attention, still getting scouted left, right, and centre, like yeah. What you said. And then I think the fact that I ended up going to Leighton Orient eventually, after a few years. But I think the fact that I was sort of not turning down clubs, but the fact that I wasn't sort of joining a club. And I think maybe my dad would have known, if I would have gone into a club and they sort of said, like, nah, we need to sort of get on his football now, I think he knows that's what would have happened. And I think it was just like, sort of hold back that sort of side of it and let's keep going with that. And then maybe he was thinking, right, then we'll throw him into an academy and do that. But obviously it didn't get to that stage because of what happened. That's in my mindset, that's what I'm sort of thinking that he was thinking.
Yes,
and,
okay.
And then we did eventually end up at Leighton Orient. Mm. But then obviously the next sort of thing happens.
Okay, well, that kind of makes sense. So, I mean, if we go into an academy, they ain't going to be having me doing... Badil Skinner and all that kind of stuff. So let's keep everything going. And like, in terms of money from McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Mizuno, I mean, was it big money or were they taking advantage as well? Or what's your, do you even know?
So what I was told after for the McDonald's advert, it could have got up to £90,000, nearly up to £100,000, which I never got. I got like maybe a few hundred quid or so. Okay. And then the Coca-Cola, I can't even remember how much I got for that, but we worked it out not long after, and people was coming to me and spoke to a few agents only a few years after, and they said it's loosed at like maybe £250,000 you would have been earning at that sort of stage. I did get some money off Mizuno, but I think it was like about £2,000 a year, and I did that for two years. And I did get little bits of money here and there, but really when you look back at it, what it should have been, it was like not even a couple of percent, maybe.
Right, okay.
And like £200,000 back in '90s is probably, might be even talking £1 million now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So did you say you should have got that, or you did get that and it went elsewhere? Or you didn't get it, the two hundred?
No, I didn't get it. I didn't get it whatsoever. But yeah, talking to people, they were saying they're the sort of numbers, like back then, not long after I stopped talking to my dad, they were saying that that's the sort of number.
Okay.
Like an agent was saying to me, that's the sort of money you would have got for that documentary. That's the sort of money you would have got paid for that, and this, that, and the other.
So where did the money go?
I don't know. I never really know the answer, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess the interesting kind of question people might have then is, how good were you? And that can sound like a really kind of crummy question to throw your way and probably a hard one to answer. But, you know, all the news features and things like, you know, The Big Breakfast and Hello Magazine and all these guys, they've never seen you play. So they probably don't know anything about football, half of them. This is just like a triumph of marketing. Oh, quirky story. He's really good. He's banging in goals at local level, you know. And your dad knew that I want to play for Ajax, I don't want to play for an English club thing.
Yeah.
I played well in the media. There was a novelty. You were really, you know, cute kid.
Yeah.
So people might be wondering, well, was this a triumph of marketing, or how good was he, or where was he? So I suspect they're wondering that. So I thought I'd throw that question to you, because even reading the book, I wasn't good so question. Sure in that period, like, was this more marketing than substance?
I mean, I like to believe it was substance at the beginning. Obviously, yeah. When I'm just getting in local newspapers, Sonny's scoring really well, getting attracted by local scouts, I'm doing something right. I'm around my kid now, plays football now. We play all the time, and some kids get scouted. A majority of them don't.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'd say there's some substance there. But obviously, when it gets to the stage, like, for instance, as we said earlier, when you come back from Ajax and you're getting sort of these big names coming in, that just took over. It's pretty much as simple as that. It was even about the mindset was completely different. It wasn't about like, all right, we're going to get him all the right gear. I'll take him over to park. We're going to be doing this session. We're going to do it. It wasn't the whole mindset the whole time. I remember looking up, just looking and thinking like, I was like, Dad, I just want to play football. I want to play football. Looking up to him, and he's just like talking to a brick wall. Like, the whole mindset has just changed. Just the fact is, like, he's going to be a star. We're going to get what we can get now, and then we'll see what happens later.
Yeah.
Where me, I was just like, obviously, as a kid, I'm just looking like thinking, like, just let me play. I just want to play. I just want to keep playing football. So then I'm always I always felt like in the middle. I always just felt like I wanted to get my dad happy, because my dad.
Mm.
And I'm thinking maybe that he's doing it for the right reasons. So I'm thinking I'm sort of going with him. But really, in my heart, I was just like, just let me play. Just let me just keep playing.
Yeah.
So it's always in that middle all the time.
Yes.
So to answer your question, at the beginning, substance, but then when it gets to that stage where it is a business, when we're talking Coca-Cola, McDonald's, and then that sort of takes over. Yeah. That's the truth.
Yeah. Mm. Because, well, I suppose when you're being talked about as the next George Best and the next Ryan Giggs, these are unbelievable comparisons to throw on a 12-year-old. You know what I mean? Let's see, can he make it first? Yes, in the Premier League. And so that's why it just seemed like it got out of control. Like, then, you know, this kid's going to be the Maradona of Enfield, you know, like.
Exactly. Well, this is actually a bit what just made me remember what you're saying there. I remember getting a Sky Sports Award in 94 and 95. So when all the players in the Premier League are picking up their awards at the halfway through, they would say, and for the youngest player of the wonder kid or whatever, up and coming player, they'd give me mine. So I'd go up and pick my award, and it'd be Alex Ferguson, Kenny Dalglish, Shearer, all clapping me, going, "Well done, Sonny." And I'm thinking, and actually, on this, I remember coming back on the first time they gave it to me, and looking in the back of the car, they sent me a limo, and looking back at it, and like, it was a gold award, it's a Sky written on it, and it was like, looked solid gold. Now, I remember being a young kid, I was 12, looking at it and thinking, is that solid gold? Like, is that actually solid? You know what I mean? But actually generally thinking to myself, like, I've done it. Like, look, I've got like all my idols are clapping me, telling me how well I've done. Mm. And looking at it and thinking like, cool, like, I've literally hit the jackpot already. Well, realistically, I'm probably 10%, 5% on the journey. Do you know what I mean? I'm like 12 years old. Like, it's ridiculous.
It just showed the power of marketing. I think Eric Hall became an agent as well, who wouldn't necessarily be football. Like, there's a kind of showbiz element there as well. Yeah. It showed, like, in so much as anything as well, the culpability of the media, I thought, reading it. Like, media here, oh, he's the next Maradona. Okay, we'll promote him as the next Maradona, without any fact-checking, without any sense of what's appropriate. It was just like, this kid is unbelievable. Wait and you see this kid. And sure, you know, off it goes. Yeah, it's a train, man.
Ball rolls. Yeah, that's it. There was no sort of, just literally just kept going and kept going and kept going.
Yeah.
And it was out of control. That's the truth. It was just out of control.
Out of control. That said, so the next Maradona, who knows, but certainly really promising player. 100%. So it gets to a stage where, despite all this industry going on in the background, you are training with Orient, and then you get taken to do some training with Chelsea. Initially, Chelsea are thinking, are you not signed with Orient? And they're reassured by your dad, I think. Oh, no, we haven't signed. Yeah. So training away with Chelsea. All the while, there's a film crew with you, which I guess is not that unusual in that your life had a lot of film crews around, and you're told it's a documentary about you. And I guess you think, well, it's not so weird. There's a documentary about me. After all, I am, you know, the next big thing. You've done loads. So then you sit down to watch this documentary, and it turns out it's like almost a sting operation, and Greg Dyke, the future FA chairman, is involved in it. And it's sort of presented as, here's big Chelsea poaching an Orient player. So you're in the documentary, but like, you're not the focus of it. It's about, you're the pawn. You're the, who Chelsea poached. And so they have footage of you training at Chelsea. They have footage of you with Orient. I guess all hell breaks loose. What age were you when this one happened?
That's 14. So that's the sort of, that's the end. I say 10 to 14. So that's 14. That's sort of the end of it, really, because that's when I get to see, because like in between 10 and 14, I'm sort of in this match where like my mum and my football coach is on one side saying, like, Sonny, concentrate on your football. You're doing this, it's taking too much. And then my dad's on the other side, like, we need to keep going. We need to keep doing this sort of thing. And I'm caught in between the whole time. Like, it's tough to sort of manage mentally. But then when I was 14, when that came out, and it wasn't what I knew it was on the TV, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, whoa, what's all these people in it? Like, Scott Parker was in it, and a lot of other players that ended up making it was all in it. And I was just told it was a documentary about me. And it was just, as I'm watching it, I'm just thinking, like, what the hell is going on in this documentary? And I actually run out into the road. I'm standing in the middle of a roundabout, and just cars are whizzing around me. And I'm just thinking, half of me's just thinking, like, I could do a jump in front of one of these cars just to stop this, like, because my head was spinning. And my dad wasn't there. He didn't come and watch it, which is strange for him, because a lot of the time we did stuff, even if my mum and dad wasn't together, he would always sort of come along and say, oh, that was good, wasn't it, son, and whatever else. So, and like,
I should say, sorry for people, when you say your dad wasn't there, Terry, your coach, who seems like a great fellow, was there. There was like a room booked in the local pub together and watch it. So people were there, that your dad hadn't showed up.
Yeah. And he hadn't showed up. So as I said, and then after that, that was the first time I seen something. I thought, wow, like, this is really going the wrong way now. This is sort of, that's it. Like, I know myself now. Next time I see my dad, I've got to say to him, like, that's it, we're done. I can't do no more media whatsoever. I need to really concentrate on my football and forget it. And that was happened about four or five weeks later. I'm training with Terry over my local, over at my school. They used to let me use the football pitch at my school. And he comes over, walks over by the gate, and he says to me, like, son, I've got some more. I mean, I hadn't seen him since the documentary's landed. Okay. He said, I've got some more work for you. I've got some more stuff for you to do. I said, Dad, I can't do it no more. I said, that's it. It's done. And it was the first time, loads of times before, I said, like, come on, I want to stop saying this. But this time I'm actually telling him, no, that's it. It's finished. And he's just like, he went to me, well, if that's what you're saying, he goes, I ain't got a son no more. And I was just like, and that hit me like a ton of bricks. Yeah. Even just saying it to you now, like, I still feel that little feeling just come through me now. And that just sort of hit me like a ton of bricks. And I turned around and I said, it looks like I ain't got a dad no more. And I walked back into Terry and say to Terry, like, what he said. And he's just, I think I swore. And Terry was like, don't you swear this, that, and the other. And I told him what he said. And he just threw a ball at me. And I just sort of remember just doing kick ups, just sort of just thinking, I'd just try and put that out of my mind for a while as much as I could. Do you know what I mean? So that's the sort of bit where it takes it into that sort of the low, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, it's horrific. It's horrific. And it's a desperate thing to go through. And the other horrible fallout from this thing is you end up being banned from football for a year, which seems insane. I really don't think it would happen today. So you're banned from football for a year.
Yeah. From an academy sort of set up or type. Chelsea or Orient was definitely like a no-go.
Yeah.
Straight not long after that, I put myself into my room for like 6 weeks, didn't want to come out at all, didn't want to talk to anyone. Even, I sound strange, but even my mum, I was really paranoid. Like, people coming in, how are you, son? I'd be like, yeah, I'm all right. Don't ask me a question sort of thing. Like, I just want to stay in bed. I felt safe. I think I felt safe in my room. I just didn't want to be, I don't know, I was just struggling. And then the phone call came in. Terry was like ringing the FA like daily. And I used to think to myself, like, why is he trying so hard? He's got no reason to sort of help me. Like, why does he keep coming up trying to help me sort of thing? Which was nice because I was upstairs and I could hear him downstairs. But he kept like sort of battling for me. I could hear him on the phone talking to the FA, like saying, like, what are we going to do about this? This is sort of scandalous and whatever else. And then he just said to me, look, son, you can't play for any of them teams no more. You can't go for an academy. What we'll do he's sort of just like, I think he was thinking more of my mind, like just to sort of just bring me back down to earth sort of thing, and sort of instead of just going so like over the top and sort of high profile, he said that he would just get you a normal club, local club, and sort of just let you bring yourself back together. And then we'll sort of go and look to try and come again at a later date. And that's what I did. I joined a local team, say 20 minutes away, just in Essex, which is, I'm in Hertfordshire, but just further enough away to sort of keep me out of the eye locally. And I did that for one season. And then I started getting scouted again. And then I saw him come back up again.
Yeah. So those next few years, it never seems like it quite clicks, you know. It seems like you lose your desire a bit for the game. You never fall back in love with it. You keep doing it because you're good at it. There's a Crystal Palace trial where you walk off the pitch. And can you kind of give us a sense of where you were with you and football then? Because you might think, okay, there's still a chance here. You know, you've gone through this horror show, 10 to 14, turfed out for a year. Terry, your family friend, keeps coaching with you. There might be a sense of someone who hasn't read the book yet thinking, okay, he's gone through this horrible time, but he's still at an age where you might get a YTS program or whatever. Like, yeah. There's still a chance, and you just don't seem to ever find yourself on a pitch again.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like you said, I go to Palace and I'm training, doing really well, playing games from this, that, and the other. And a bit of time, I think 18 months might have passed by now, might be 15 and a half,
yeah,
coming towards 16. And I've done the year from 15 to 16 at Loughton, the type of club I said. And the next season, that gives me one season to try and get an apprenticeship. And I end up at Palace, like I said. And right at the end of the season, on a random Sunday, News of the World, double page spread. You know, my dad had done a piece with whoever he'd done it with, just said, my football breaks up my family. And it just mentioned all the clubs, how much they had offered me. Villa offered my dad a home abroad and a job, and Manchester United this and whatever else. All he just sort of just went out, and I think it was his like last hurrah, let's say, and just like I'm going to tell him everything, and obviously get a few quid. I think it was like £24,000 for a media article, in News of the World. And I see that I'm at Palace. That was on the Sunday they come out, and on the Wednesday they said, we've got a game at Tottenham. I played against Tottenham at their training ground, and then because I think that piece had come out before, I built this pressure. I knew people was going to be watching like any time, like ever. Do you know what I mean? This has just come out. This is when there was no social media. Whatever you listen to or see in the News of the World was like gospel, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? So like I'm turning up for the game, putting myself with this pressure, like I've got to literally do miracles. I've got to take on everyone, top bins, at tricks and everything else. Anyway, I take a few touches. Nothing really goes terribly wrong, to be honest with you, but mentally I just feel like I'm back on that roundabout again. I'm just like, everything's happening too fast, and everything's just like, I'm pretty much having a panic attack maybe, or some type of breakdown. And I just walk off the pitch and just say to the Martin Sprockett, who's the manager, I said, like, I'm injured. I think I might have been holding my leg as if I've done an hamstring or something like that. But realistically, I hadn't done anything. I just wanted to get off the pitch. I got off the pitch and sat in the changing room. And I knew then that it was sort of over. I sort of knew that football, I wasn't going to be a football player no more. And then that takes me only a few days after that. I mean, I end up at Archway in London, Suicide Bridge they call it, and I'm on my bike with all my friends. We drove past, you have to go up to a hill to get to the top of it where the bridge is, then it goes back down. We go up to the top of it there. I put my brakes on, all my friends carry on down the hill, and I stay at the top. And obviously when you're kids, they don't even turn around, do they? I quickly put my bike there and I walk back to the bridge, and then I'm at the top of the bridge, and I'm thinking like, that's where it got me at the end of the day.
Yes.
No,
it's horrific, really. The next number of years, I mean, putting your life back together, trying to leave football behind, having to deal with everyone you meet going, Sonny Pike, what went wrong? All of that stuff. What was that like then, trying to, I guess, become an adult and find your way in the world?
That's it. Yeah, like you said, just going in. I go and work for my friend's building company. Going into pubs, like, Sonny, how are you, mate? You're like, what happened? What happened? And you're like, oh, like, it's a book.
It's complicated.
Like, listen, however long we're going to do, and we're going to get a good, hopefully you get a good idea of the story. But like, when you're sitting there thinking, I just want to have a drink and I just want to have a good night, and then you've got about four or five geezers hanging off the side, you're trying to explain to them everything. You're just like, oh,
it'd be easier if you could just say injury.
Yeah, so it'd be nice. Yeah, it'd be brilliant. I could just broke my leg, done, job done. Yeah. But it's so complicated, like so much went on. But now, to be fair, over the last 2 weeks since the book's come out, I'm just like, yeah, go and read this book and then come back and talk to me later. Do you know what I mean? That's like the little perfect little thing for me now.
If you really want to know, you can read the book.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And was it a difficult period then? Kind of like, did you find it as the money and everything in football has gone, you know, and it's such, I guess, it's a dream world. Did you find it hard to look at the game? Did you find it hard to cope with having a quote unquote normal life after kind of tasting and touching fame and being so close?
Yeah, I did. I struggled for a while. I mean, a couple of times after I stopped playing, because after that I went to Stevenage and then I come away from the game completely. Mm. And it says in the book, I get a phone call randomly from Sam Allardyce asking me to go and join Bolton. And I get a little spring in my step, like, oh, I'm going to go and play in the Premier League. I had to go and get fit, and I couldn't even last for 3 weeks trying to get fit. So I had another couple of situations where I almost got back in. Mm. But realistically, like, I couldn't watch it for probably close to 10 years. I couldn't watch football. Yeah. Mm. Long time. I just couldn't really watch it. I think there's a build up of frustration, but I associated all the drama that had gone on off the pitch with the game, which obviously now as an adult, it's just like, I'm realistic. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with the game. The game's the sport. I love playing the sport now, and I coach kids and do all the good stuff now. But then I just associated with, like, just stay away from that. It's just not worth the drama. It's not worth the aggravation. Even if it was watching it, friends asked me to go and play for either side, I'd be like, no. I think close to 10 years, I didn't even touch a ball.
Mm. It doesn't seem like you managed to repair the relationship with your father either, which is, I guess, one of the great sadnesses of the whole thing.
Yeah. No, nothing as of yet. Yeah, I mean, you never know. But when my book was getting, that it was going to come, that I got a deal, he did send a message over social media, said, if you need any help and whatever else. And I just sent him a nice message back saying, thanks for the help. If I need any help, I'll let you know. And that was that. But I still haven't seen him face to face since the conversation I told you about over the school. And that was like 23 years ago. That was literally the last conversation I had with him. So, yeah, no, nothing there. But, I mean, as I said, I'm so far past everything now. Just wishing everyone all the best, really. I'm not really too bothered either way.
You're not too bothered either way. Because I was going to ask, how does that sit with you? Because I guess life is so short and none of us are going to be around forever. And is it okay if that's how it's left with you? Or is it even, it must be very sad and difficult, even though I understand why there might be some anger there, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is, I've built such a good foundation of, like, I've learned about how to sort of live the right way and do the right things. I mean, it's just, I know I'm fine as I am. Mm. But, like, as I said, you never know what happens. I've actually had, over the last few weeks since the book's come out, a handful of people looking to do documentaries, this, that and the other. And I know the angle. Like, they're talking about Netflix, this, that and the other. And I know, well, I will never be surprised if it was like they meet and that scene happens. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So you never know. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen, really, do you?
Yeah. You get a little glimpse there that you can already see how the media works. You've got a certain understanding of it now.
As soon as the book come out, I said to my missus, Rosie, she's not too close. I said, do you know what's going to happen next? I said, it'll be a documentary, this, that and the other, and whatever else. But, like, listen, my thing is now, I've sort of got to a stage where I can sort of talk about my story a lot now. And I know that it's sort of doing a good job for other people. Mm. And even yesterday, I did something yesterday for FIFA, a mental health campaign called Reach Out. It was like me with like all like CAFU and like well-known legends football thing. And it's me sort of putting my message out for, because I think they use the players for like ex-players that might be struggling with mental health, but with me talking to, like, say, kids that don't make it.
Yeah.
And I think using me to sort of pass that message. And they asked me a question yesterday and said to me, like, what was the good points and the bad points. And then I went up, when I got to, I said the bad points, but when I said the good points, I actually sat there in a chair and thought to myself, doing now, what I'm doing now, like what I'm doing with you, if I know that's helping someone, that's the good point for me. That's where I get the good sort of buzz out of it, if you know what I mean. I think to myself, like, yeah, to be fair, like a parent might be listening to this now, having a kid, and think to myself, you know what? I'm gonna just sort of take it a bit, not take it easy with them, because I know they understand that kids have to work hard to do things. I'm not one of these people turning around saying, oh, just see what happens. Listen, you have to work hard to be a football player, but maybe just sort of manage it in the right way. And maybe as a parent and a kid, they can enjoy it more with it being so intense. You know what I mean? Because I coach kids now, and I, and especially if they're in academies, the pressure that runs through the family, especially like when they think, oh, I've got a game, or it's retain and release. I sort of understand all that now. And I know like my story is going to help people.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of good feeling I get.
Hey, look, there's so much money involved. Kids are the winning lottery ticket for families, you know, that's the horrible reality in certain cases. So a final one, Sonny, life now, I know you're a big family man, coached football, as you said, have your own little academy and everything. I think black cab driver over in London as well, and taking along with a nice, ordinary, at the moment anyway, documentary-free life.
Exactly, yeah. No, just a very, it's weird because I just love the sort of being stable, just like being able to just go to work, come home, have me dinner, talk to my kids, and it probably sounds proper boring to some people, but I'm like, yes, that's like the best thing I could ask for, do you know what I mean? That's what I needed back then. I just needed that sort of normality sort of thing. Just thinking about it, like when I stopped playing football, there's even bits where I sort of slide into sort of criminality and this, that, and the other. And even that, my normal life after football wasn't normal. Mm. It was that even went off the radar. So now for me to be just like live and just go work and like be in the cab or coaching like I do here where I am, it's just so nice. Yeah, just love it. Happy days.
Listen, you did really well to get it back on track, because it could have been just very difficult to live with that whole mess. So the book, as I said, is, I'll hold it up here again, Sonny Pike, The Greatest Footballer That Never Was. And it's out now if people fancy a read. So Sonny, thanks so much for the time. Great to hear your story. No problem. And best of luck with things in the future. Cheers.
I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating 10k to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Quickstart car insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at getsetgo.ie.